Is corporate ethics an oxymoron? Do you have to be a jerk to be a successful CEO? Is exploitation the only path to profit? The good news is that many companies, big and small, in the food economy are blazing a different path through Wall Street's jungle of greed, demonstrating that money and morality can be compatible. Texas supermarket chain HEB, for example, has drawn an intense loyal customer base by 1. Investing in good wages and benefits for employees, 2. Showing up in such emergencies as pandemics, hurricanes, freezes to give essential supplies and hands-on help, and 3. Being an involved and supportive neighbor to the hundreds of unique communities it serves. Also, Maine Grains is relocalizing the business of milling grain by working with local farmers who had been abandoned by global grain marketers. They're producing flours from heritage grains, boosting the local economy in the process. Then there's Bob's Red Mill, which also mills its products from diverse natural grains, and it's 100% employee-owned. These are part of a rising business alternative to the selfish profiteering ethic of Fortune 500 titans. Called certified B corporations, they definitely exist to make a profit, but they're equally focused on having a positive social impact, prioritizing fair wages, environmental protections, and healthy communities as core elements of their missions, even making those goals legal requirements of their corporate charter. This is Jim Hightower saying Ben & Jerry's and New Belgium Brewery are just a couple more of some 3,800 other businesses now organized as B Corps. Though not pretending to be perfect, they're at least striving to be more than money grubbers, instead trying to contribute to the common good. For more information, go to bcorporation.net. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you lowdowners who subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. You know who you are. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I'm going to tell you some fun news today. Some more of the Capitol rioters arrested. Evidently, one guy brought a sawed-off shotgun to the Capitol on January 6th. And then he was plotting to blow up an Amazon data center. Yeah, got a hold of him. And then three more. Evidently, three alleged supporters of the 3% group. They are charged in new charges in the conspiracy there, because look, you know, they came all the way from California to overthrow our government. They should get a going away prize of a nice trial and hopefully a nice cot, a toilet right next to them and some gray bars and some three hots and a cot. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on our newest potential felons and all of the top stories of the day. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come talk with us. Sarah is a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, their website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, and I'm getting better. The more of these stories I see of these criminals who invaded our Capitol and have been causing chaos, the more of them being arrested I see, the better I think it's going to be.
I know. It's nice to see justice is actually happening.
Yeah, I mean, all of these groups, you know, the 3%ers, the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, all of, our hat trick of white supremacy.
Yeah, and one of the interesting thing about the six guys that were indicted, that were named today in the indictment, two of them were with Roger Stone the day before the insurrection. So I find that just fascinating. They were doing security for him.
And again, this is why I think we do need to have an investigation, and I think we need to find out who funded all of this stuff and drill down into the funding of all these organizations.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we've talked before about one of the guys who was doing caravans. I think too, obviously the thing with the Republican report that was released this week is it just really focused on what happened in the few hours that the insurrection was actually going on. And it didn't really address any of the main issues with what caused it, you know, any plans that were going on before them. And so it really neglected all of this information about, you know, intelligence that was already gathered. It didn't deal with planning that was in place. It didn't deal with, you know, all the Republican parties that paid for people to come to the event. It really left out a lot, which I think, you know, again, like Democrats have said over and over again, this is one of the main reasons we need an actual investigation into this thing. So, yep.
And I say the investigation shouldn't stop there. I mean, we should be going after all these characters who were involved in this whole thing. And I look at, you know, the Trump's lawyer, that Lynn Wood, who I love the fact that they've been unable to stop the psychiatric exam of this guy. Because, you know, I've seen him speak a couple of times, not in person, but over the YouTubes. This guy's out there.
He's a little special.
He's a little special.
He blessed his heart. this guy is several flies over the cuckoo nest. That's really what happened there. But yeah, the Georgia Republican Party, somebody filed a complaint against him saying that that they questioned his mental health after obviously a plethora of crazy lawsuits all across the country. Michigan is actually also trying to disbar him. But the main part is the complaint in Georgia, where he has fought, you know, I guess this idea of taking a competency exam or like a mental health exam. And the Georgia Bar Association has actually said, you know, it's not actually necessary if you don't want to do it. We're just saying that that's going to be part of the investigation that we do, because the investigation actually looks at all of it, you know, everything that has happened leading up to it. So it's kind of like, you know, this is one opportunity where he could actually sit in front of a psychologist and be like, yeah, no, this is all for show. This is just complete nonsense, or, you know, tell the truth about it being completely nuts. Or they can look at several months of his work and his specialness and ultimately find that he's maybe not mentally fit to practice law in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, no. Or, you know, the other side of this, you go, you know what? I had a little break. I had a little breakdown. I'm getting treatment now. I'm better. I'm on the meds. I'm better. Use it as an excuse. Blame all of the things, like he believes that Trump's coming back. I guess he thought Trump was coming back in, you know, March, April, May, somewhere around there. I know it's been pushed off to August. I guess he wasn't involved in that conversation. I guess that was the MyPillow guy. But, you know, I guess you go and say, hey, I was a little crazy. I was off my meds at the time.
I mean, and one of the things that a lot of the insurrectionists have been saying is that they have foxitis or demophobia. I made up a whole bunch of different possible diseases.
Demophobia.
And so, I, you know, it's entirely possible that he could claim that. I don't know if that's actually going to work. It seems like once the Q shaman started, I think he was among the first to use the foxitis idea. He didn't call it that. And then it seems like all of them are now starting to try and use that as an excuse.
Yeah.
So Linwood, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you need something. The only card they've got is the pity card. Feel sorry for me. Cause they play the victim so well.
They do. And now it's interesting. Sorry. My allergies are just killing me today. The interesting thing about, what they're trying to do in these excuses is, you know, for somebody who purports to be so powerful and so, you know, they're the savior of the American democracy, the president called on them, right? And yet you are now a victim? Like, it makes them seem really, really weak and sad. And that's the thing that really surprises me about the Republican Party in general, is they're really good at playing the victim. And for somebody that is supposed to be, you know, Trump always talks about, you know, manliness and this masculinity crap and all of that. And yet as a victim, they just look so weak and sad.
Yeah. No, but here's the thing, you know, they're and the excuse that I do give is, look, they've they've been subjected to, you know, decades of you know, brainwashing and groupthink and, you know, all of that stuff, you know, where they've been told repeatedly that they're the victim, that they're powerless, that only in the group and only together with and only with the Republican Party leading this, that they can find themselves and return America to what it once was, that they don't even know, which is, I guess, I don't know. I might be a little sympathetic too.
What's interesting, though, is they want to return America to this ideal that existed before half of them were even born.
Yeah.
Like, most of these guys are in their, like, 30s and 40s. They weren't around in the 1950s. They have no idea. They have no clue.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is that they want to return to, but this, you know, what they really want to return to is a world where white men were the most powerful, women stayed at home, and brown people didn't, you know, get hired for stuff.
And the gays were still in the closets.
Yes. Yes.
And occasionally they'd sneak into the closet, but no, didn't tell anyone.
Yes. It's funny. I actually have a rainbow balloon hanging on my closet right now. It's not in my closet. It is outside my closet.
All right. Well, there you go. Good, 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 good. But, you know, hey, lots of fun on that front. Also wanted to get your thoughts on the other story that I found very interesting today. Jeffrey Toobin is back on CNN.
Yes. Yes, he is. I don't know why people keep asking me about this. I don't know if it's because I use the term wanking. Because I don't like the word masturbation. I don't know why. It just seems so clinical. And yeah. Anyway, Jeffrey, I don't give a damn. I really don't care.
I love the fact that
not like he intentionally like de-pantsed himself and went streaking on a high school football field, right? This is an accident. This is an old man who doesn't know how to use his technology. The dude needs to get some electrical tape and just, like, put it over his camera. It's different, I feel like, if it's somebody who intentionally was trying to do something gross and creepy to, you know, like a flasher on the train or something, right? This was not that. And so today, Jeffrey Toobin came back, and I had to listen to Allison Camerota asking him about wanking and him saying that he's in therapy. Which, I mean, therapy, good on you. Everybody should do therapy once in their lives. But therapy for, you know, that just seems a little
if that's the bar at which men have to go seek therapy, there isn't a man in this country that isn't going to be in serious, deep therapy.
I mean, right. Here's the thing. Like, everybody does it. I hate to break it to you. Like, why are we being so prudish about this?
Yeah.
Some people more than others. God knows it's been a while. But, you know, seriously, like, everybody does it. Just stop such a square about it. And the thing that I feel like is being lost in all of this that I really got excited about, not physically, was Toobin said that throughout this whole course of his time away from the people, he's been working on a new book about the Oklahoma City bombing. And the one link between what's been happening at the Capitol and Oklahoma City is this anti-government hate and these militias. And this is stuff that we've talked about for a long time. And so I'm really curious to see this new kind of conversation linking the two of those things. And so hopefully we can get beyond Toobin's wank habits and talk about, you know, things that matter again.
Yeah. Does he ever not, is he ever not a verb?
Oh man. Here's the thing. The name really lends itself to verbing. So, you know,
there you go.
You're tubing in. I gotta go tubing myself. Excuse me.
I'm sure there are a lot of people who wouldn't mind. So there is that. Let's go on to another media figure who's gone the other way. Evidently, Glenn Beck has retracted his apology for calling President Obama racist. Now he says, I was exactly right.
Whatever. I mean, here's the thing about Glenn Beck is he's a fraud. I feel like that's one of the major reasons that he's been kicked off of a bunch of stuff, is that everybody knows that this is all fake. It's an act. He's a performer. None of it's real. This is an opportunist thing. People who work for him have said it. Everybody who's ever met him has said it. Like, why do we care?
I don't, but I thought it was funny that now he's back to it. He can't decide which side of it he's on. Yes, I said it. No, I'm sorry. I regret it. I shouldn't have said it. And now he's back to it. No, I said it. And again, you know, down the road, he'll go, oh, I'm sorry. I was off my meds.
It just seems like an attempt to be relevant again. And it's like, no, go away. We have enough crazy on Fox News. Like, we don't really need any more.
Yeah, I mean, see, the thing with me is, you know, I'm looking at Fox News and I'm going, you know, their defense. I can't get past the defense that, you know, that they said no reasonable person would believe us.
I know. reasonable people should not believe it. And it kind of makes you wonder what they think of their own viewers. Are they saying that their own viewers aren't reasonable people?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really twisted. Crazy. I want to get your thoughts on, evidently today, Jim Jordan was grilling the FBI over their investigation of Rudy Giuliani. How dare they? How dare the FBI seize records from Rudy's his home and his offices and take his 18 devices and all of that? How dare they?
I think the one thing that we have learned this week is Rudy Giuliani was doing some really sketchy stuff on that phone call with Ukraine. I think we've heard some reports about what was going on that call before. This week, we actually heard the call. And it is very clear that Rudy Giuliani was attempting to bribe the Ukrainian government.
Yeah.
Not only that, he was doing it on behalf of Donald Trump, and he was doing it on the phone with Kurt Volker, who then lied to Congress about it. So there's a lot going on here. Kurt Volker actually now is a fellow at George Washington University, which I feel like GW is going to have to answer some questions about what they're, you know, how they feel about, you know, somebody who lied to Congress working as a fellow for them. There's an international lobbying firm that has hired this guy. So that can't possibly look, you know, good for their PR. So it's just Jim Jordan. It's funny that Jordan is saying all of this after obviously a Newsweek that has completely destroyed Rudy Giuliani. Like, why was he not paying attention to the news this week? Did he just did he write these questions without watching television?
He cashed the check. He cashed the check.
Yeah. I don't even think it's that. I think he is so far up the tubing of the Republican Party that he just carries the water for everybody.
And this is the interesting part, because, you know, I've had these conversations about Giuliani with Trump supporters, and no matter what, as soon as you bring up that Rudy may have done something, no, you can't, because ultimately, if Rudy's done something wrong, it's not too far of a stretch to get to the dear extreme leader, you know, did something wrong. And we already know what that phone call was. You had Rudy trying to strong arm him. Then you had Trump, you know, following up on that strong arming.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked before, I think, about both of us assume that there is a recording of the call with Donald Trump. And
I'm sure the Russians have it.
If not the Russians, I think for sure the Ukrainians, right? Like, wouldn't you be recording every single phone call with Donald Trump? Because, I mean, you never know whether or not he means what he actually says, or if he's going to renege on something. Or, I mean, I would not trust anything that Donald Trump tells me. And if you record it, at the very least, you know that if he then later lies about it, you can be like, oh, not so fast. But, you know, who knows? Maybe they didn't, but I'm sure Russia has it. I would not be surprised if we as the United States don't have it and it's not on some secure server somewhere. So I really wish the DOJ would go combing through some of that stuff.
Yeah. Now, are you as disappointed in Merrick Garland as some folks are?
Because, yes.
There's a lot of folks really kind of not happy. And I'll be honest with you. I thought Merrick Garland was a mistake. I thought he was a mistake as a Supreme Court justice. I would have liked to have seen someone a little more progressive, a little more to the left. He is a dead center moderate. a guy who I don't think is going to rock the boat or go against precedent. And I think we're in kind of a moment where we do have to go back and investigate the last administration because they literally made criming a verb.
Yeah, they did. I mean, and one of the, I'm of two minds on this. One, yes, I am very disappointed that he and Biden too have this very broad understanding of executive privilege. And over again, people who are infinitely smarter than I am, people who have been federal prosecutors who've worked in the legal field for a long time, have said, like, this doesn't make sense in this instance. This is something that happened decades ago, and that several judges, state Supreme Court, have said should move forward. And it doesn't make sense for the Justice Department under Trump to come in and intervene. And it sure doesn't make sense for all of a sudden the Biden Department of Justice to start defending him. This is not the case to do it. I get that there's a lot of executive privilege stuff that happened in Trump's administration. If you want to defend that, I get it. This is not the place to do it.
Yeah.
When it comes to the other issue, the second piece of this is that I wonder if Garland is trying to just sort of cover his butt on this and try and make it seem like, you know, we have done all of the due diligence necessary to, you know, give Trump the benefit of the doubt that he was, you know, essentially breaking the law, that he was obstructing justice. With Don McGahn's testimony, you have somebody on a congressional record confirming, you know, not just Robert Mueller and not just his report, you have McGahn confirming that report that Trump asked him to, you know, to cover this up, to obstruct justice, Trump asked him to lie about it. And so, I mean, you can see in the tapes that everybody keeps running over and over again of Robert Mueller. They were just like, so you're saying that Donald Trump could be arrested and charged and indicted after he leaves office? And he was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, and so is this a Mueller moment then? Because Mueller didn't believe that he had the power to bring any charges or to indict or do any of the things that a lot of people were hoping, and that he deferred to Congress. Is this another moment where you think, Garland is saying, you know, this isn't the job of the DOJ, this is the job of Congress, and you got a bunch of people in Congress going, no, these are crimes. You're the top cop. You go get the criminals. Is it one of those, and then they just keep pointing at each other and nothing gets done?
I just don't see how that's going to happen from Garland's perspective, because this no longer applies. You know, it's very clear that he obstructed justice, and we heard it in this congressional hearing today. He is not the president anymore. He can be indicted, even if you do believe in that DOJ rule, which should also be reexamined. But I don't see how he could avoid it. And I think, too, one of the important points a lot of folks have made is that we have a government that we kind of found some bugs in, right? Like, we have some issues that need to be fixed. We need to run an update on our government, on the presidency, and make sure that we're doing things that are protecting us from the future. One of the things that actually Rachel Maddow pointed out last night is there's a 6-part piece in the Boston Globe that is epic. And it walks through all of the things that could be done to sort of shore up the safety of the American presidency, to make sure that it is essentially tyranny proof, right? To make sure that no person, Donald Trump or anyone else, could ever do what he did to our country and abuse the office in the way he did. And I really hope that, you know, Garland and Biden really look at this as something that really needs to be done.
No, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes. But I'll tell you, I hope someone holds them accountable, because it's all the wrong messaging. Look, I go back to the old TV show Beretta. You do the crime, you got to do the time. You know, and from the president on down. And look, we're finding out every day lots of criming going on during that administration and stuff that we've even forgotten happened. So there's opportunity. I want to get some of your thoughts on some of the craziness. Yesterday we did Wingnut Week in Review because I had to get through the middle of the week with all the craziness going on. I want to start with Louis Go-Go Gohmert. Evidently, Louis thinks that the folks at the Bureau of Land Management have the power to change the rotation of the sun and the moon.
The earth and the moon. There is a way that you can do that. It would involve a whole lot of nuclear explosions on the earth, though, and kill a lot of people. If you blow it up enough, it would probably knock the earth into a different orbit.
So you're going with probe. He thinks if NASA thinks we can blow some stuff up, we can change things. All right.
Yeah, we're all dead though, and we've destroyed the planet at that point. So, I mean, the idea reminds me a lot about Donald Trump asking if he can nuke a hurricane.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing where Louis Gohmert is looking for these absurd ideas to fix problems so that he doesn't have to drive an electric car, you know, so that he can still have coal that nobody wants to use because it's too expensive, or use Aquanet or whatever it is that he does.
He's bald.
And I know, right? I could totally see him still using Aquanet just to get that perfect shine, you know.
Maybe that's how they get the spoons to stick to their head.
Right? That's the other thing, right? Did you notice how that woman couldn't get the key to stick to her forehead?
Yeah, I that's the other place I wanted to go. I wanted to go to the woman who, the tenpenny woman who thinks that we're all now going to be magnets because of the vaccine and the 5G technology. I'm amused by it that you would take these things and put them together. It reminds me, you know, of the people who used to complain that they lived under the power lines. And there was some actual truth to, you know, they were getting cancer and nobody believed them. So I'm going, you know, is she right? And then I go, no, I don't know how the two go together. And we're so bad at 5G technology. I don't even know that they have it in Ohio.
Well, too, I feel like if we were magnetic, that would be the best thing ever because I would never lose my keys again.
Well, but if you walk by the knife drawer, you could probably get, you know, stabbed to death. That'd be bad.
True. You could also end up jacking a whole bunch of laptops from the Apple store inadvertently. I mean, that's one thing. If people just get in their cars after they've got the vaccine and their cars don't stick to them, Then you're not magnetic.
There you go. You know what was scary to me, though, is she's an actual doctor who has actual patients. That's kind of freaky. It's kind of frightening. Because, look, I've got a doctor I really like. I trust him. You know, when the vaccine or when the pandemic was first coming around, I went to him. It was like February. And I said, hey, what do you think? He goes, well, you know, wear the mask, socially distance, and wash your hands. That's what we do. That's the playbook. That's what you're going to have to do. That's the future. And then when the vaccine comes, get the vaccine, and then still stay the hell away from each other for a while. Let it take. He said, look, 6 months after they say it's okay to take the mask off, there's going to be at least one guy still wearing a mask. He said, me. And I said, that's good advice. I think I'll follow that.
There you go. I mean, I think with this woman, it makes me think a lot about Lynn Wood. There's still a competency thing for people who are on the medical, you know, who've been given a medical license. And I think that woman needs to file a complaint against that woman because that's really scary. It makes me think a lot of the people at the hospital that won't get the vaccine, it's like, you work in science. Like, you should know better. No. How is it that I, as somebody who's just a complete, you know, idiot who barely made it through college physics, right? How is it that I get this better than you do? That I have more information than you do?
Because you don't watch YouTube videos with your mouth open.
Right, that's true. I don't do that.
Because evidently this woman, she's done 10,000 hours of research. 10,000 hours.
On YouTube?
Well, I don't know where she did it. I don't know what she was doing for 10,000 hours. But is there 10,000 hours worth of research to be had?
No, there's not. Vaccine? I mean, there's definitely some. One of the things that they do talk about is it is not a vaccine that has just come out of nowhere that we've come up with in the last year. The base of the SARS virus, they've been trying to work on a vaccine for SARS, you know, broadly for the last 5 years.
Right.
So they kind of used that same baseline of vaccine crafting. I don't know, what do you call that? To start their research on. So they really had a lot of stuff already going to figure it out. So this is not something that sort of happened overnight. And it's not something that, I mean, obviously we've had millions and millions and millions of people who've gotten this vaccine, even in clinical trials. It did surprisingly well, ridiculously well, way better than most other vaccines do. And now we've had millions and millions of people, and not a whole lot of people have had issues. The biggest one was the Johnson & Johnson blood clot issue.
Right.
The rest of them don't really have that problem. You know, anytime Tucker Carlson says that there are people who died after getting the vaccine, I say there are people who died after watching Tucker Carlson. So, you know,
and no reasonable person would believe anything he says, because that's their defense.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. But, you know, here's the thing. At the end of this, Donald Trump wants to be known as the godfather of the vaccine, yet his followers are the ones who are saying, I'm not going to get it because it's going to kill me, which is just weird.
It's amazing. Talk about the best conflict ever of all time. Even people who, there are a couple of interviews that I've seen of people who are just like, I know he says I should get it, but I don't care. I don't care. I don't trust him.
I did my YouTube research.
There you go.
All tubing. there you go. Sarah, as always, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Have a good night and a good weekend.
You as well. Our good friend Sarah Burst. Make sure you check out the work she does over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Keystone XL crude oil pipeline is done. It's canceled.
Finally, a hard-won victory for tribes and environmentalists as massive controversial tar sands pipeline is finally dead. Mass arrests at Line 3 pipeline protest in Minnesota, plus Biden's infrastructure talks with Republicans collapse and start all over again.
All of that good news and bad straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I would have thought Trump would be a huge fan of Bitcoin. I mean, it's a way to both hide dirty money and destroy the environment at the same time. What's not to like?
Sounds about right. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, so the 13-year dream of a massive 1,200-mile pipeline to ship 830,000 barrels of dirty tar sands oil each day from Alberta, Canada, to refineries in Texas for shipping overseas amid catastrophically dangerous global warming due to the burning of fossil fuels is now, what? Officially canceled?
Oh my, yes it is. The on-again, off-again, zombie-like Keystone XL pipeline has been officially nixed by its own Canadian developer, TC Energy, after the Biden administration declined to renew its cross-border permit.
Are you sure it's dead? Is it really dead this time? Because I've heard time and time again this thing is dead, and then it comes back to life like Freddy Krueger.
Yes, it appears to be really dead. It had originally been canceled by President Obama, then revived by President Trump. This marks a big victory for environmental groups, tribes, and landowners across the route who fought for more than 13 years to stop the project, arguing that the dirty tar sands oil it would carry posed an unacceptable risk to drinking water supplies and the environment and would worsen the climate crisis. TC Energy, formerly TransCanada, said that it would coordinate with regulators, stakeholders, and Indigenous groups to ensure a safe exit from the project.
And if there's anything I associate with TC Energy, it's safety.
Meanwhile, in Minnesota this week, police arrested hundreds of protesters blocking construction on the controversial Line 3 pipeline, owned and operated by spill-plagued pipeline company Enbridge. Like the Keystone XL, Line 3 would transport heavy tar sands oil from Canada into the U.S. Native American tribes and environmental groups argue the pipeline isn't needed. It threatens hundreds of miles of the state's delicate watersheds and drinking supplies, violates tribal sovereignty, and contributes to man-made global warming. In operation, Line 3 Pipeline's annual emissions are projected to be equal to 45 coal-fired power plants. In Washington, President Joe Biden has ended lengthy negotiations with West Virginia Senator Shelley Moore Capito over his infrastructure jobs proposal after Republicans refused to budge substantially on its scope and funding mechanisms. Biden now turns to negotiating with a different group of both Democrats and Republicans. But as Brad has noted in a recent broadcast, Republican Senator Roy Blunt kind of gave away the game on Meet the Press, letting slip that Republicans have no intention of voting for any Biden infrastructure jobs package because they're planning to run against it in the crucial 2022 midterm elections.
The Biden agenda is an agenda that Republicans are going to be talking about defining themselves based on our differences on things like what is infrastructure.
Yes, of course. If they're going to be running on what is infrastructure in 2022, I kind of doubt they're going to pass an infrastructure bill in 2021.
As we go to air, President Biden is on the first foreign trip of his presidency, joining the G7 summit of the world's seven largest economies. Last month, those G7 countries, the UK, US, Canada, Italy, France, Germany, and Japan, all committed to ending financing of new coal power plants around the world, part of their pledge to cut greenhouse gas emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change. However, a new analysis finds that in the last year, those same G7 countries committed $50 billion more to new fossil fuel projects than to clean energy projects, spending just $150 billion on clean energy versus nearly $200 billion to finance oil, coal, and gas development.
Not good.
But some good news. The Biden administration has begun the legal process to repeal a Trump-era rule that ended federal protections for hundreds of thousands of small streams, wetlands, and waterways that provide drinking water for millions of Americans. The Trump rollback would have opened up the waterways to pollution from development, industry, and agriculture. And finally, Maine has become the first state legislature in the United States to pass a fossil fuel divestment bill, directing its $17 billion pension fund and state treasury to divest from coal, oil, and gas investments. It is a major victory for climate justice groups.
We'll take all of the victories we can get, especially the end of the Keystone XL pipeline.
Indeed.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we've all seen the story that 55 U.S. corporations paid no federal income tax last year. Paid no federal taxes. 55 of them, nothing. In fact, some of them we actually paid. I mean, that's the great thing. I mean, you got these companies that are wildly profitable. They've figured out how to use the tax code exactly how it was designed. This is not a failure. And, you know, because, you know, when I talk about this stuff, you know, it sounds like, you know, oh, they've done something wrong. You know, they've broken the law. You know, when Bezos, you know, is able to hire these tax avoidance lawyers, you know, they spend all of their lives figuring out how to manipulate the tax code to be able to get every single deduction. In fact, you know, I've said it about Trump's tax returns. I said, one, I think the reason he doesn't want them to be seen is you're going to find out that he's not as rich as he says he is. And two, you're going to find out that his people were extraordinarily aggressive in going after every last dime that they could squeeze out of Uncle Sam and doing the shady things that you know, Michael Cohen has said he's done. When it's in his benefit, he overinflates the value of his holdings. When it's in his benefit, he undervalues it, depending on which crowd you're talking to. If you got to pay taxes on it, really, well, we're poor. We don't have a dime. And when you're borrowing money from a Deutsche Bank, that's way up here. When you're borrowing money from the Russian oligarchs, it's way, way up here. When it's in his interest. So I look at, some of the information coming out about, these 55 companies who didn't, obviously pay any federal tax, but did have $450 million to spend on lobbying. And you go, this is exactly how you get into these moments where $450 million was spent on lobbying and on campaign donations. And this is how you get a tax code that goes, yeah, let's create the environment where you can literally pay zero. Let's create a tax code where, some poor working stiff, we're going to make him pay. But corporate America gets to walk away. We get to use a territorial tax system that allows us to shield profits in other places. To where eventually, all the profits that we make here, we can just take somewhere else and not be taxed at. All the while lowering that tax rate, saying, 35% was just incredibly onerous. What we knew then, and this is where the right is masterful. Republican legislators are masterful, and some Democrats too. This is a bipartisan thing. Corporate America buys both sides. And in fact, that was the only honest thing I think Donald Trump ever said. When he was running, he said, look, I've given money to all of them. Because when he needs something, he goes to them. Corporate America is the same way. They're going to buy whatever they need to get what they need, which is, lower taxes. That's what they want. Lax environmental regulations. Bust up those unions. So I look at this, and again, it's another one of these moments where you just go, all of this money that we're handing out in lobbying and campaign donations, which is why we need transparency across the board, which is why I've always been one who says, we should be forcing these companies to say how much they're spending on lobbying, how much they're spending on union busting. This stuff should be transparent. How much they're handing off to politicians. Even the backroom stuff where they're buying, a bunch of their crummy books and throwing them away. We should be finding out about this because, look, they've created the best tax code money can buy. They've figured out how to go from an Eisenhower era corporate tax rate of 56% down to an effective tax rate of somewhere around, the last number I saw was around 12%. And 55 companies paid zero. I mean, it's quite remarkable. Now you stop and you think about, the little guy. Again, we always talk about small businesses. What about the small to mid-sized businesses who are getting socked? Because we've allowed the behemoths, what used to be the bedrock of our tax system, we've let them go. What used to generate the most income for our country so that we could do the big things? We've allowed them to lobby themselves out of it. We don't tax corporations at anywhere near the rate we did. We don't tax the wealthy at really anywhere near the way we did. And we wonder why we have trillions of dollars in debt. It's crazy. And you go through the fact that we just went through a pandemic and we're still going through it. And our billionaire class got even wildly wealthier. And did we tax them on any of that? No. And what we're now finding out, and this again is another one of those kind of predictable, but angering on another hand, they're saying about half of the unemployment benefits that went out were stolen. You had thieves who had figured out how they're going to manipulate the system. And I don't know where I live here. There have been, you know, a couple of stories day after day after day of the IRS going back and saying, well, you know what? This company cheated the PPP program. This company cheated. And look, they're going to come. And I hope they catch every one of these cheats. Now, the problem is some of the people who stole the unemployment, you know, they're in China, they're in Russia, and of course the Nigerian prince. I'm sure he got his pennies. At the higher end, they're saying 70% of that money was stolen, was from out of the country. Now, I blame the states for this. I blame the states that had really poor systems. To where this again is where you go, this is where when we do everything over the phone or digitally, and we have no checks in place, and we don't have the resources to hire people to do more, and we've gone down to bare bones employment at the state level, this is what you get. Now what you have is you have Republican governors across the country saying, well, you know, even the money that wasn't stolen, we're going to pull back so that workers don't get it. And what we're finding is the states that are doing this and have begun to do it, you're starting to see some economic slowing. And I'm going to be interested to see in a couple of months when they finally implemented their plans across all the states that have done it, just how bad it is for them. And then how much we have to bail them out. This is my frustration. My frustration is you've got these red states who don't pay the same tax rates. They're actually takers, and they're, you know, taking more federal dollars than they're putting in. When they run themselves adrift, then we've got to go and got to bail them out. Think Kansas. They went and they slashed and burned their tax base, and then we have to figure out because we can't fund our schools, we can't fund our roads. This is the problem with having this corporate tax fetish, this allegiance to the very wealthy, the pledges of we're never going to raise taxes ever, ever, ever for any reason. And I've said this before. Look, I'm a tax and spend liberal. I'll be open and honest about it. I believe we need things collectively as a country. We need to get things done. We need roads paved. We need bridges done. We need kids to have education. We need a healthcare system for especially during pandemic times. There's a lot of things that we need. There are a lot of things that we need that individually we can never do. Collectively, we have to do this. And I know that sounds like socialism. It kind of is. It's part of being in the community. It's taxes are your dues to be part of the community. My problem is for so long we've been around spend and borrow conservatives who want to spend on things like tax cuts for the very wealthy and don't want to pay for them. Yeah, it's interesting with this infrastructure debate. They want the infrastructure, they say, they claim. It's got to be paid for, though, because we need a balanced budget now that we've got a Democratic president. Yet they won't allow for revenue enhancements. They won't allow to raise taxes on the people who have done really freaking well. Because the argument is, and I just had this conversation, the argument is, well, you give those people the money, they know what to do with it. And his argument was, you know, he voted for Donald Trump because Trump's a businessman. You know, if you give Donald Trump money, he's going to figure out how to do with it. And I'm going, you do realize he ran a casino into bankruptcy. You do get that, right? He was a crummy businessman. You do know he's mainly responsible for the USFL going belly up. You do get that, right? He was a really bad businessman. And there are hundreds, if not, you know, 1,000 small businesses and people who did work for him that he cheated and grifted out of work. That is not a good business. I guess the question I have is that what you view as a good businessman? Because that's the policies that we've allowed to grow up around us. We've allowed the people who have figured out how to game and cheat the system, lobby themselves the best benefits, to dominate our system. And I'm in this moment where I'm not ashamed to say I'm a tax and spend liberal. Look, you know, the people who make the most money, we should be taxing. We should go back to the good socialist president Dwight Eisenhower's tax code, where we don't have three or four or five, where we have a couple hundred tax brackets, where every couple of $1,000 goes up a couple of pennies. And the better you do, the more you're going to pay into it. Small little percentages all the way up so that we get the revenue that we need to make sure that every time I drive down the road, I'm not going, well, there goes my front end. And we have a healthcare system that can deal with crisis. We have a medical system that can take care of people when they're old. We have an environment that we can breathe. There are things that we can do. We just have to want to. I'd love to hear your thoughts, though. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Is it fair? Is it right that you got 55 companies who pay nothing? Is the argument, well, you know, they create jobs, a lot of them elsewhere. Is that the right argument? I'd love to hear your thoughts. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day that the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a decision that would have massive implications for American workers. The case was known as Anderson v. Mount Clemens Pottery. The pottery company was operated on a large 8-acre property in Mount Clemens, Michigan. Each day, the workers punched into their shifts and then had to make their way to their workstations. There, they had to get ready to work, perhaps donning gloves, sharpening tools, or readying their workstations. The company estimated that these tasks took 14 minutes. So, they subtracted 14 minutes from the workers' timesheets each day. Seven workers had had enough and decided to sue the company, with backing from their union. They argued that they should be compensated for their entire time, including the time it took to prepare for work. The Supreme Court agreed with the workers. Justice Frank Murphy wrote the decision for the court. He himself was from Michigan and had previously been the mayor of Detroit and the governor of the state. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court case was not the last word on the matter. In 1994, the State Bar of Michigan and the Macomb County Bar Association helped erect a historic marker commemorating this important case. It described what happened after Justice Murphy's determination. Quote, the following year, Congress, responding to the Mount Clemens Pottery decision, enacted the Portal to Portal Act to relieve employers of the obligation to pay for time spent in non-productive activities, except where such activities are compensable through custom or contract, notably through collective bargaining. In other words, Congress passed a law undermining the court's protection of workers.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I have to admit, I've never been to a Starbucks. I don't drink coffee, so yeah, I'm a truck driver that doesn't drink coffee. Figure that one out. I've never, and if I did, it wouldn't be Starbucks. Way too expensive. But, you know, here's the thing. I know a lot of people do. It's real popular. They've got, you know, all kinds of, I can't even go through the list of kind of drinks that they have. But I know a lot of people who like them. Evidently, there's a national shortage of the ingredients that Starbucks needs to make their popular drinks. They can't get the breakfast foods they need. Even cups and lids and straws, there's a shortage. And, you know, I've been seeing some of these stories that, you know, there's a national shortage of... It kind of makes me think that some of this stuff is a little made up. Like, you know, you hear some of these stories that, oh, I can't give you this or that because, well, there's a shortage. It's like the change thing. You know, everyone's saying, oh, we need change because there's a change shortage. Yet you never went anywhere where they didn't have any change. Or at least I didn't. It was one of those things where, you know, immediately we get into this kind of depression era thinking, which is kind of worrisome. Now, are there shortages? Yes, there are some things in our supply chain that do need to be looked at, which is why I'm glad that the Biden administration is looking at how we strengthen our supply chain. But personally, I think a lot of it is just opportunism. Corporate America going, hey, you know, if we just make a little bit less, that whole supply and demand X thing we learned about in Econ 100, you know, as the supply goes down, the prices go up. Kind of something the bullet manufacturers, you know, the ammunition people realized during the Obama years. We can claim that there's, you know, Obama's coming for your guns and the bullets too, and you know, just, you know, make sure that there aren't quite enough so people are willing to pay the premium price for it. Yeah, good business, good American capitalist business principles. I think there's a big part of that. And if you've bought, you know, some of the building and construction materials, you know, they're saying, oh, it's because, you know, tariffs, it's because of all the, you know, the pandemic. No, it's because there's a lot of building going on. That's a big part of it. And also, I believe that our manufacturers are holding things back. But I guess, I guess no unicorn cake pop at Starbucks. I guess they can't get the caramel, which evidently there's a national shortage, according to some of the folks who have commented on it. There is a national shortage of caramel. I don't know. I guess tomorrow everyone's going to run to the local grocery store and buy up all the caramel to make sure that they aren't left behind. We will have another TP moment where people have a life supply of caramel in the cabinet. But thank goodness I have it. Never needed it before, but thank goodness I have the caramel. And I guess it's one of those things that just makes you go, I worry about us. I worry about us as a people. When we believe some of the weirdest things, I worry about us at a time when we should be pulling together and marching in the same direction, that you still have people who are trying to tear us apart and divide us. And especially on things that, you know, were never all that divisive in the past. And I know we're not allowed to get along anymore. We're not allowed to talk to each other. I enjoy talking with people who disagree with me. I want to know where folks are coming from, because only then can we understand. I would love nothing more, and I'm attempting to reach out to find Dr. Tenpenny to get her on the show, because I got to know what it is that led her to think that you can get the vaccine, and, you know, because, you know, part of it is, you know, Bill Gates put the RFID chip in it. And the 5G, you know, magnetized. You know, that's part of it. But I got to hear her say it. Because we've had really smart people on this program. A lot of doctors have come on and talked about, you know, hey, you know, this is why we need to be vaccinated. These are the risks. Because there are risks with everything. There's risks with drinking water or breathing air. What are the real risks? And then what are the imaginary risks? Because my problem is, you know, there are real risks to things. And if we're spending all of our time worried about being stabbed by a flying knife because we're magnetized, and we're not talking about the potential of something else, we're missing an opportunity. But just in case, if you have been vaccinated and you have walked under the 5G stream and you feel you may be magnetized, stay away from the knife drawer. Just my thoughts. I'm kidding. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go, wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.